Ja, dann herzlich willkommen zum dritten Vortrag in diesem Panel. Ich freue mich, Ihnen Mirko Tobias Schäfer vorstellen zu können. Er ist Assistant Professor for New Media and Digital Culture am Department for Media and Culture Studies an der Universität Utrecht. Studiert hat er in Wien und in Utrecht, und zwar Theater, Film und Medien- und Kommunikationswissenschaften und Digital Culture in Utrecht. Von 2000 bis 2002 war er Organisator und Co-Kurator des Wiener Festivals für digitale Kultur, D-Vision. Und nach dem Abschluss des Magisters in Wien 2002 hat er also seine akademische Laufbahn an der Uni Utrecht fortgesetzt, wo er 2008 auch seine Dissertation zum Thema Participatory Culture vorgelegt hat. Schwerpunkte seiner Veröffentlichungen sind modifizierte Unterhaltungselektronik, Softwareentwicklung und soziopolitische Debatten zum Thema Informations- und Kommunikationstechnologien. Zwei seiner Veröffentlichungen möchte ich hier kurz nennen. Er ist Mitherausgeber des kürzlich erschienenen Sammelbands Digital Material, Tracing New Media in Everyday Life and Technology, zu dem er auch den Aufsatz Participation Insight, User Activity Between Design and Appropriation beigesteuert hat. Und die zweite wichtige Publikation ist eine Dissertation, die jetzt im Dezember bei Amsterdam University Press und Chicago University Press erscheinen wird. Der Titel ist Bastard Culture, How User Participation Transforms Cultural Production. Und er befragt darin nochmal diese Vermischung von Produzent und Nutzer argumentiert, dass also die Kulturindustrie eigentlich einen Shift gemacht hat vom Inhalte bereitstellen zu also Plattformen bereitstellen und untersucht, wie dieser Shift in verschiedenen auf verschiedenen Ebenen sich auswirkt, unter anderem im Bereich von Hacking, von Fan-Communities und Web 2.0-Plattformen oder Anwendungen. Sein Beitrag trägt den Titel Run Subversion.exe, subversive Medienpraktiken als Mythos und Praxis. Und auch da wird er ein bisschen kritischer der Frage nachgehen, ob dieser Einsatz von Tactical Media tatsächlich die Geheimwaffe politischer Aktivisten ist oder ob das Ganze nicht doch eher ein bisschen in Richtung Legende geht und der wirklich subversive Einsatz von Medientechnologie nicht eigentlich ganz woanders stattfindet. Er wird seinen Vortrag im Interesse unserer internationalen Gäste auf Englisch halten. Ich hoffe, dass alle deutschen Teilnehmer damit auch zurechtkommen. Wir freuen uns auf den Vortrag. Danke.
Vielen Dank. Theo mentioned already that I'm going to give this talk in English because I failed in sending my text in time for the interpreters to prepare a translation, and I just have to say I have great admiration for the work of the interpreters here on the conference to do all this simultaneous translation from one language to the other. As to my presentation, before I start, I just want to say something about the background of this presentation. It's based on my research into hacking communities and their appropriation of electronic consumer goods, which I did for the past 5 years. And one central key finding there was that these communities are less ideologized than the accompanying discourse might assume. They are very pragmatic in choosing the tools and the devices to hack, and they are actually, most of them aren't caught up in a fight against Microsoft or any other companies. It's about doing some things. And the other key finding was that their so-called subversive activities actually helped the companies improving their design. So due to appropriation, the design became much better. The other part of this presentation is based on my ongoing discussion with Hans Bernhard from Übermorgen.com, whose work is generally described as subversive. However, I notice a crucial difference between the reception of Übermorgen's work in the accompanying discourse and the attention of the artists themselves. That led actually to a first publication on thoughts on media hacking, which is available in Subversionen zum Verhältnis von Politik und Ästhetik in der Gegenwart, edited by Thomas Ernst, Patricia Gosalves Canto, Sebastian Richter und Nadia Sennewald in Julia Tieke, which was the result of a similar conference, but then revolving around the term of subversion. So, for our dealings with inventions and the participation of artists in creating subversive or subversive works or works that intervene with something, I want to describe the emergence of a sort of a canon, of a body of work that is always brought up when touching upon this issue. Tinkering with new technologies often leads to surprising, attractive, and most importantly, unforeseen results. Many of the experimental media configurations conducted by artists and activists appear to be provocative and critical towards established power structures. From Dada to the situation is international, to punk music and new media, the fling of social political critique with new forms of media expression created attention and spread messages effectively. Often entering uncharted territory in how to use media technology, artists provided innovative ways of communication in their various experimental works. Their media experiments provide new forms of experience which can address current social political issues. They do that often in a disturbing and maybe even disrupting way. It is therefore not surprising that these media productions are then labeled as subversive. What's happening here is that the accompanying discourse is actually creating a sort of a canonic repertoire of works that are inherently or immediately recognized as subversive or as interventions or as anti-hegemonic and critical work, work that is questioning the status quo. This is not actually constituting a grammar of the subversive or a grammar of interventions, but it is building up to something that we refer to in our daily discourse if we deal with artworks like this. This is also accompanied by another emergence of a logos, constituting a logos through connecting the various works of critical theory, political activism in German Kultur und Gesellschaftskritik to an entity of artists' works. This body is actually fostered as a general framework of what we then recognize as subversive. While Walter Benjamin was one of the first scholars formulating social-political critique through criticizing media and media production, the self-acclaimed communication guerrilla proceeded to conduct critique through producing media content themselves. So in the 90s, there was a new discourse emerging. In Germany, it was the Handbuch der Kommunikationsguerilla. And in the English-speaking world, it was The Culture Jam by Karl Larsen. And those works, both of them explicitly refer to this body of scholarly work and the body of artist works that we now recognize as inherently subversive. So they build a fundament for their own argumentation strategy or their own justification discourse. They also refer most notably to Roland Barthes and his idea of changing the images instead of destroying them, Umberto Eco's notion of a semiotic guerrilla, Guy Debord, and of course Michel de Certeau's notion on practices in everyday life as tactics or strategies. The examples in art and media technology have therefore effectively shaped our understanding not only of what might be a subversive media practice, but also the creation of a common understanding that is used as a signifier to communicate with others who recognize the subversive in that style. The style is used in basically all media productions of the communication guerrilla, and The Handbuch der Kommunikationsguerilla offers a step-by-step guide how to use certain tactics and how to produce certain media products. In the reception of subversive media practices, these associations, the association of that something might be subversive, matters actually more than a rigorous analysis of the media practice itself and a measurement of their effectiveness. So it's more important to those who promote those media works that they appear to be subversive, that there's a touch of this is actually anti-establishment. Due to the new technologies, the idea of a subversive machine emerged. The idea that the computer and the internet is able to turn all the passive consumers into active participants and to active rebels, which actually nourished all the utopian ideas that are around since the emergence of the counterculture in the 60s that were actively participating in producing computer technology as a means of changing the world. However, they turned out to become rich businessmen and women. The expectation that users have into this machine and the expectation that users have into the community appears to be a naive and a rather vague and not really defined idea of a utopian community and society. And this will be happen due to the work of a subversive machine that they have at their disposal for creating a better world. So oscillating between the promise of enabling users and the threat of stupefying them through seductive manipulation, media technology constitutes an area of conflict in which certain media practices are consequently labeled as subversive. Those media practices are recognized for their potential of either subverting literally the functionality of media technologies or as means of social-political critique and activism. However, the meaning of subversive in these media practices appears to be twofold. It can acknowledge an effect, that means that the technology is literally changing something and has an effect we can measure and recognize, or, on the other hand, by calling something subversive. The attribute of subversion is assigned to a practice, a technology, an artwork, no matter whether it is actually subverting anything. Just once, a brief example, we've seen the Nike plots by 01.org, and it is known in the art community that the artists approached Nike first, even before they started to do that, and Nike Italy actually wanted to fund the project, but they happened not to have a budget for funding art, so that's why they did not do it, and obscure Austrian political organization started to finance the entire venture and help the artists to get well known in the art world and invited to festivals. So my problem, or what I think is noteworthy here and something we need to revisit, is the projection of social progress on technological advancement, the idea that when technology will proceed, the society will become a better society just due to the new technologies. And second problem is the illusion that the technologies that are at the disposal of activists would not just as well serve their own opponents. The idea that the technology is only serving the good ones, the ones we affiliate with, the leftists, the rebels, the opponents, but we tend to forget that the subversive might take place just on the other side, those that are actually the ones we want to get rid of, or some people want to get rid of. I now turn to an example to show how effectively a debate can be provoked. And someone who was really good in that field was a benevolent photographer, Oliviero Toscani, who effectively provoked heated debates by simply using photography that was considered to be inappropriate for advertising purposes. The motives, including, among others, a crowded refugee boat, a dying HIV patient, and the bloodstained clothes of a Yugoslavian civil war fighter, were referring to serious social-political issues and not to consumerism. Their graphic appearance was considered to be appalling, and using them as means of advertising appeared as mere sarcasm. The subversive potential of Toscani-Benetton's campaigns isn't found in the public outrage, but manifested itself in relating consumerism to social political consciousness. In the age of mechanical reproduction, the product is completely arbitrary, but symbolic capital of the brand is able to make a difference. The intelligent collage of placing provoking pictures that refer to urgent social political issues into the dispositive of shopping created a distinctive image for Benetton. However, the Toscani campaigns teach two important things about communication strategies. They tend to escalation and they can be emulated, which means that if Toscani wanted to go on with that, he would be forced to come up with new shocking combinations of images and discourses all the time, which is quite difficult to do. And the second problem is that it can be emulated. In a more lighter form, it is now around in advertising and became even part of our entire consumer culture. The attempt to generate a distinctive brand of social-political concerned consumer goods is best illustrated in Zizek's notion of consumer capitalism in his text, First as Tragedy and Then as Farce. And there's an example for that. The New Markets campaign by Diesel employs tropes of the Benetton campaigns in an elevated form. While Toscani left no space for playful interpretation of the images, Diesel encodes his message in a more comic way by placing an advertising for Escape Now next to the father and son seeking shelter for the rain and living in a the image associates a rather harsh and unfree society in a communist world. And the step is not far to this. Simultaneously with the emergence of the internet and World Wide Web as mainstream media, tinkering with media became even more easy and attractive. Labeled as communication guerrilla, hacktivism, culture jamming, Kommunikationsguerilla, a critique of media industries was formulated as do-it-yourself media productions. Former advertiser Kalle Larsen founded the Adbusters organizations that have been mentioned earlier this week in order to criticize consumer culture and promote subversive media use. It must be known that simultaneously he commodified critique by offering a magazine Adbusters and selling the resistance to people who felt discontent with the consumer society. Spoof ads produced by Adbusters and others were easily attracting the attention of culture critiques, but also found a favorable audience that enjoyed the playful aspect of semantically tweaking corporate messages. Using the style of well-known brands, spoof advertising mocks the original message. An image of the iconic Absolut vodka bottle with a limp neck and the tagline Absolut Impotence indicates problematic effects on alcohol abuse. Other ads refer to the child labor on Nike shoes or the connection between the fashion industry and anorexia. The logic behind these parodied images follows Barth's oft-quoted question: is not the best subversion to distort the codes rather than destroy them? But the semantic guerrilla did not take the flexibility of consumer culture into consideration. Stealing eyeballs is what advertising agencies specialize in, and they quickly learned that a consumer message does not necessarily have to be positive or even charming about the product, but it has to be generically distinctive. So I would argue that the Handbuch der Kommunikationsguerilla is actually a great blueprint for producing better advertising. How ineffective the spoof ad's aesthetic is becomes clear when looking at a choice of viral marketing ads. Viral marketing relies on media content that is contagiously attractive, messages that are worth sharing in a snowball way, that users want to send to their friends and just want to use it as the daily joke. In 2003, fake Puma ads were circulating quickly through various internet platforms. The images were displaying a young woman kneeling suggestively in front of a man. On second sight, one could even make out a milkish liquid on the woman's thigh. The oranges of the fake Puma ads were quickly resolved, as Peter Kim, at the time international marketing manager at Puma, explains in his own Verlog. I quote, "What really happened? A small Eastern European agency affiliated with Saatchi & Saatchi created the ad on spec, trying to win business with Puma subsidiaries. They got nothing and emailed the ads to friends. From that point on, it snowballed. As you can guess, when Puma Powers decided to get all corporate on the blogosphere, the whole thing exploded. Online store sales were up like crazy for a couple of weeks. Too bad we didn't even have the shoes in the ads in stock. Another example, and then I think I made my point clear on that one. Similar to the Puma fake ads is the Polo Suicide Bomber clip, a video that was also distributed virally. It features a man with explosive attached to his body. The man drives in a Volkswagen Polo through his city and stops in front of a lively cafe. He takes a deep breath and ignites the bomb. The bomb explodes and the car remains undamaged, and the tagline says, "Polo, small but tough." While Puma and Polo were refusing any responsibility in the production of these advertising, and Volkswagen allegedly even pressed charges against the at the time unknown producers of the video, both ads were not at all damaging the company's image. Due to the excellent production of the Suicide Bomber video, which was directed by the professional advertisers known as Lee and Dan, allegations have been made that the clip originally has been produced for Volkswagen but did not get approval. As an unapproved ad, it circulated effectively, distributing a Volkswagen image that Volkswagen officially could not condone on. But on an unofficial level, it was easy to accept. The subversive aspect about these ads is simply their distorted style of displaying a message that collides with the traditional image of the brand and the company. It appears as subversive because the explicit message does not match the recipient's expectation of a corporate message. It even suggests the work of someone who might be criticizing the company or someone who might gone rogue, which adds some sex to the ad, in fact. However, by doing so, the image is emotionally charged and increases in value. So what I find interesting is between those latter two ads and the spoof ads, which are supposed to criticize consumer culture, I don't really see a difference, actually, neither in the production nor in the distribution and nor in the message displayed. Now we come to a social phenomenon related to media technology. The aspect of intervention as something limited to a certain time period seems to me more present in web communities. That's one aspect. If I think about intervention, the aspect that's limited, it's temporarily limited, is important. And this is something that is really lively in internet communities. Platforms as insertion.info fire up intervention as sort of leisure activity. Posting potential targets for the campaign to a wiki, the community then decides on whom to concentrate their unorganized efforts. Insertion.info is very much closely related to 4chan.org, which is an image sharing website using their powers once at a time for bashing innocent victims, in this case not so innocent one. Tom Cruise's clumsy attempt to request the removal of a video showing him speaking at a Scientology workshop led to the emergence of the most successful, in terms of media attention at least, demonstrations against the Scientology church. Messages spread through an image board called 4chan. It's actually one of the dirtier sites of the internet, where users usually share photoshopped images. The most obvious aspect of the rallies of Anonymous, that's what the group, I wouldn't call it a community, I wouldn't call it a group, that's the name of the loose collection of people, against Scientology was the fun aspect, the party atmosphere, the Mardi Gras appearance of its participants displaying plenty of intertextual references to internet culture and internet memes. So, I don't know who of you is familiar with 4chan.org or internet culture, but long cat is a really familiar meme online. People from the internet communities will immediately recognize this as a distinct aspect of internet culture. And so are the anonymous masks and probably other items you can find here. Pedo bear might be lurking in the background somewhere as well. This has been certainly very successful to attract the media attention, at least for a short while, as long as Scientology was ill-prepared in responding to activities that were well-concerted but lacked an organizational center. What the media and many of the commentators did not understand about these activities, and what left the serious and committed Scientology opponents puzzled, is that it was never meant to be something else than a temporary joke. There was no idea of subverting Scientology for real. This was just a joke, and the people came, and the people who were committed to fight against Scientology thought, great, we have some allies, and then they were be left behind. After the momentum of the unorganized multitude was used up, the energy faded out and left behind the Scientology victims who briefly thought they'd found new and powerful allies. So, interesting here is that there are some topics around that are able to mobilize multitudes, groups without a center. These are loose forms of organization and very effectively working communication channels. And the communication channels are used as means of organization. That does not make those communication channels subversive media. They are just in that moment, used in that dispositive or that situation, used as a tactical medium. That does not mean that they become that in general, which is one of the claims that is often made by commentators of new media. That goes even further. The already mentioned insurgent.info wiki that is also related to the 4chan people, and I think there are great overlaps in participants, is providing software and concerted actions against all kinds of victims. In 2009, it was an Iranian website hosted by police authorities. The website was used to display photos of demonstrators for identification. The mission of the people attracted to insurgent.info was to bring down the website. Since a real distributed denial of service attack is something rather sophisticated and requests even a network of computers for flooding the server in question, the server is a website that has to be brought down, an easy to use software application called Epic Fail Cannon, you can see a screenshot here, comes in handy. Unskilled users, people who have no idea about how technology works, can easily participate in the flooding of a web server just by entering the correct IP address, which is this one. This is the IP address of the website, the Iranian website, gerdav.ir. And then you just press, that this was taken while I was flooding, so normally there's the start flooding, and then you, after a while, you press stop flooding. And then it stops. So these activities were part of the concerted and unorganized activities to support Iranian bloggers with information infrastructure to spread news in grassroots fashion and to distribute images and videos from the shocking events taking place in Tehran. However, while the Western internet users were celebrating their participation in a so-called Twitter revolution, the built-in technology of communication devices produced by Siemens Nokia helped successfully to shut down dissent, identify insurgents, and to massively tamp phones. So, while the armchair activists in the Western world felt comfortable in helping to participate in a revolution, in fact, the revolution was shut down by the same, by Western technology that was part of the devices that Siemens Nokia sent to Tehran. This is true for other repressive regimes as well. As Evgeny Morozov explains, the Web2.0 application for social networks helped the Belarus police authorities to effectively identify, intimidate, or even arrest regime critics. When social networks were used for organizing demonstrations, the police was first on location. My critique on the discourse and on the ongoing discourse here is the inability to recognize the ambivalence of technology, that it can use the same way by authorities for subverting the attempt to criticize governments, and that the reception of these activities is really in a puzzling way blind for the intervention of government organizations, that there's just pre-assumed that intervention and subversiveness is something that is conducted by the left, something conducted by those who are fighting for democracy, and not in a much smarter way, actually, done by those who want to stay in power. How much time do I have left? No time left? But, so I'm not starting and following a 20, and I skipped the art because we had some art, but...
Let's see the art.
You want to see the art?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I can skip the botnets then maybe, but very briefly, this is all from the work of Übermorgen.com has been considered a very subversive artwork. The idea was actually pretty cool. What in the basic concept, they were using a flaw in the popular Amazon search inside the book function, and were able to extract entire books and provide them as PDF. The activities were presented as a great book heist and an alleged deal with Amazon to sell the software afterwards. But, for one, when looking at the art at an exhibition site, you quickly notice it is not even necessary to steal the books literally for the artwork. It does not make a difference. And as I know Hans Bernhard from Übermorgen.com as a guy who's very well aware of media, of the workings, the functioning of media, he might have thought the same. And he just gave away in an interview the secret of their technology, how they exploited the flaw in the Amazon software. So it was not about stealing the books. It was about raising the attention within the art world that they did something like that and provided a concept like that. And they were very successful since they won several awards in this tiny art world of media art that takes place on places like Transmediale, Dutch Electronic Art Festival, and other places you probably have never heard of. And in that world, they, of course, were very successful with their trip. Another art example is the so-called Web 2.0 suicide machine, which actually thrives on the popularity of Web 2.0 platforms in general. The guys at the Modder Lab in Rotterdam found a way to scrap your personal data from Facebook once you provide them your password and your account name. The thing went insanely popular, and they even claimed to having been on South Park. If you have a second look, you see there are serious allegations that they probably just downloaded a torrent file of South Park and inserted their own propaganda in the torrent file and uploaded it back to the Pirate Bay again. The South Park users actually condoned of that that hack later. Another aspect about their work, about the web suicide machine itself, that immediately has been banned from Facebook, is that people are actually willing to give their passwords and their user accounts to these nice people, but actually I wouldn't trust them my passwords. And from statistics, we know that that we use these passwords for all other kinds of internet aspects. Actually, this aspect was brought to my attention by Wendy Chun, who mentioned that last week in a lecture. I did not even think of giving my passwords to them, but actually that's the most subversive aspect about the technology, I guess, that they get hands on all those passwords. Another aspect that is underestimated in the entire hype around the Web 2.0 suicide machine is, of course, that Facebook relies on a social login. It doesn't care, actually, or it shouldn't care about the existence of a suicide machine, because everybody who decides to sign off of Facebook is willing to leave his or her entire social network. Of course, many people want to do that, and the suicide machine can't handle the request. But I think overall, at a user base of 500 million exceeding, Facebook is really not threatened by the Web 2.0 suicide machine. Another aspect of Facebook and subversive activities, and that is goes mostly unnoticed, and I find that is something that tells us more about intervention, is Facebook spam. The idea to post some like messages like, I will never text again after seeing this. The idea is that you see that a friend of yours clicked on that link, and you most likely want to do the same because you are either intrigued by the tagline, and secondly, you're convinced a friend of yours did it and must be good. If you do so, you're immediately sharing all your contacts with the provider of this application in question, who's going to use that to spread further messages of conversion nature to your circle of friends. Plus, you have the embarrassing that all your friends who actually are in the meantime aware of Facebook spam notice that you have clicked on Facebook spam. Briefly, I think the biggest and most crucial aspect about subversion online is the creation of zombie botnets, computers that are taken over by viruses and are used for spreading spam around the world. This is a picture of one of the biggest botnets, and every dot represents a host of the network. And there are on the Internet Relay Check, you can tune into channels like Bots for Sale, and you can hire bot networks for spreading spam messages. I think that in dealing with the aspect of intervention or subversion, a quote from Coyne comes in handy, or you could also refer to Schumpeter's creative destruction. Coyne says the potency of this play between construction and deconstruction is exemplified in the computer world through the perpetration of computer viruses. The constructive destructive game of the computer hacker places security, robustness, automated agency on the agenda. As part of an industry of moves and countermoves, it informs the development of operating systems, networks, and programming practices. And that is something that we have to take into consideration when talking about this as well. What will be the countermove, and how is a system in question changing due to that? In that aspect, I'm a bit negative about the potential for subversion or intervention, but I don't have a blueprint for the better world or how to work effectively against this. But what I find interesting are the little steps. And we heard something about WikiLeaks today, and I'm coming to an end now. I find interesting that in dealing with technology, we learn to employ technology for certain social practices we are dealing with since a long time. Wikipedia shows how democratic decision processes can be implemented into design and how you can build design that actually fosters transparency and actually protects an open resource for vandalism. WikiLeaks shows a blueprint for the integration of new technologies and media practices in social processes, like automatizing protected ways of filing controversial documents, as lobbying for a legal change to foster the protection of whistleblowers and to expand possibilities for investigative journalism. It's there where intervention has to take place, the little steps, and not the hope that a secret machine, subversion.exe, will once change our life. Thank you very much.